Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal right here on Revolution Radio, where I'll be joined later this morning by Joe Olson, who just attended a JFK conference in Dallas, and we expect to be discussing what he learned there. Should be a very interesting situation. Meanwhile, I want to give you some updates about the news. We have a new script being provided by Joe Biden and the German Chancellor Scholz, a plan for Ukraine leaked that Zelensky should negotiate with Russia and accept brutal compromises after over $100 billion in unaccounted for taxpayer dollars was funneled off to Ukraine. U.S. President Joe Biden and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz have a new plan. According to Germany's Bild newspaper, the secret plan calls on the Ukrainian president to come to the realization that things cannot go on as they have been. Zelensky should explain to his nation that negotiation must be carried out. The latest German-U.S. plan involves the U.S. and West supplying Ukraine with enough weapons to hold the current front and to give up any expectation of recapturing lost eastern territory taken by Russia. His explosive report reveals that Chancellor Scholz and President Biden want to bring the Russia-Ukraine war to an end. Ukrainian President Zelensky should be forced to a very specific way to negotiate with Putin and accept brutal compromises. That's pretty fascinating, but of course we know it is a lost cause. So this is just a token of reality. Meanwhile, in relation to Gaza and Israel, Newsmax reports a ceasefire has taken hold ahead of a release of the hostages. A temporary ceasefire took hold Friday, the first in 48 days. No big bombing, artillery strikes, or rocket attacks were reported, although Hamas and Israel both accused each other of sporadic shooting and other violations. More significantly, the first exchange of hostages has taken place. Here's the report from the Epoch Times. Hamas on Friday. Let me catch this. Well, this is actual video footage of when the exchange is taking place. I mean, that's all good as far as it goes. But let me just report on the story. Officials confirmed that 12 captured nationals were among those who were released by Hamas. While Israeli media reported a group of women and children are being handed over to Egyptian officials. That Prime Minister Sereta Shafin sent a social media post. The 12 Thais have been released from captivity in Gaza. There was no further information immediately available about the Thai prisoners. This release had not previously been announced as one of the terms of an agreed prisoner swap accompanying the first truce of the seven-week-old war. Meanwhile, we have observations from Colonel Douglas McGregor as to what's going on. I like McGregor.
He met with China's President Xi Jinping for 4 hours earlier this week and said he made, quote, real progress in relations between the two superpowers. After going an entire year without speaking, the two leaders agreed to call each other directly when needed. Our next guest was in attendance at Wednesday's dinner.
Here we go.
On the front page of the Daily Mail, you're a colonel, he's a colonel. I thought I would just throw it out there. Okay.
So we're not all electronically linked, you know.
Yeah. Okay, couple of questions, and then I know you have to get off. Since the October attack on Israel, the U.S. military has had an increase in attacks in Iraq and in Syria. Do you think as the Israel-Gaza situation continues that the United States military bases and units will become increasingly under threat around the world?
Well, I don't know about around the world, but very definitely inside the Islamic world. When I was in the building and before I went into the building and I first interviewed with the president for another position, I warned about the situation in Turkey. I felt strongly that we should get our forces out of there. If you go back to 2003, you will remember that the Turks denied us access to moving our forces through Turkey into Iraq. And everyone was shocked. But nobody knows the truth or the historical record. When we first went in to Iraq, the Turks were apoplectic. They were apoplectic because the Turks, of course, regard the Iranians as a rival. They saw Saddam Hussein, for a whole range of reasons, as essentially a bulwark against Iran. They didn't want us to go in there and destabilize the country. And they knew, because Iraq is another artificial construct. It's not a real country in the sense that we think of ourselves in Europe as nations. You could argue that we in the West, in the United States, are an artificial construct in many ways. We weren't always that way, but increasingly it looks that way. But that's not true in the Middle East. Iraq was drawn up along with Jordan and a number of other countries at the Versailles Peace Conference. So they said, look, he may not be perfect, but the country is stable. We can do business with it. We can live with it. And he's focused primarily or disproportionately on Iran. We ignored it. We went back in 2003 and did more damage. We created the Kurdish monster in many respects that now threatens or has been threatening Turkey for some time, despite Mr. Erdogan's best efforts to try and tame that. So the Turks look at us and say, you're nothing but trouble. You've caused us unending heartache. Same thing is true in most of the Arab countries. I think we need to understand that. And Americans, they don't. You know, we're back to this. So the Americans wear the white hats. We're the good guys. We come in, peace, love, and harmony burst out from every direction. No, it's not the case. So we need to get those troops out. Donald Trump wanted to get them out when I was there in November and December and early January. He wanted them out of Iraq. He wanted them out of Syria. And he was obstructed. He was obstructed by his own party on the Hill. He was obstructed by numerous lobbies because the argument was, well, we have to stay there because of the Iranian threat. Well, the Iranian threat was already in Iraq. The Iranians have been running the show there almost from November of 2003 until the present. We could never have had any modicum of stability in that country if the Iranians hadn't intervened with the Shiites in the south so that we could deal with the Sunnis in the middle by either buying them off with cash or killing them. So the whole thing has been a facade of stability that was never there. We need to get out. Syria is another one. And our positions in these countries are, by any stretch of the imagination, illegal. The Iraqi parliament voted us out back in 2020, said, get out, leave our country. So much for our respect for democracy. We said, oh, sorry, can't do that. We're staying. Syria is another case. We are there illegally. There's nothing there that justifies our presence or control of this tiny oil spot that's up in the northeast of the country. And now we are viewed as unwanted aliens and potentially threatening, not just to the Iranians and the Iranian proxy of militias, but by the Sunnis and the Turks. So we need to get out, but we won't get out. We'll stay, and things are going to get a lot worse. And it's going to be very difficult to rescue them. A friend of mine in the building gave me a good comparison. It's a bad, bad thought, but it worries me a great deal. Most of your viewers will not remember World War II and Wake Island. Wake Island was this tiny island out in the vast Pacific. It was important to us for many reasons strategically, but it was indefensible. It was too small, couldn't possibly be defended. We wanted to get troops out, but we couldn't. So the Marines that were on Wake were lost. They were captured and went away. The same thing was true in the Philippines. We tried to get out of the Philippines through most of the 1930s. FDR actually empowered MacArthur with the president of the Philippines to make a deal for neutrality for the Philippines so that we could avoid a war with the Japanese in the event that they decided to seize the Philippines. All of these things failed. So we had 11,000 American soldiers captured on Bataan. We had 1,000 plus Marines and sailors captured on Wake Island. We have a history of this. This is not good. And once the enemy holds your soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, what are you left to do? What's your answer? Global war? Total war? World war? Why wait for the inevitable to occur? So I think we should get out of all of these places, but I hold the minority opinion.
Yeah. Okay, just a couple more questions, then we'll get you out. I appreciate your time. Saudi Arabia has called for an end to the carnage happening in Gaza. Prince Mohammed bin Salman has said if Israel doesn't stop these illegal attacks on Palestine and Gaza, that he will wake up the Middle East against Israel. Is this a credible threat? What are your thoughts on his comments?
I think they've already begun the wake-up call. So I think he's absolutely serious. Now, the Saudis and the Emirates, Egypt in particular, several other North African countries, they have a weapon at their disposal in terms of oil and gas. In the case of Saudi Arabia, it has the weapon known as the U.S. Treasuries. If it simply dumps all of the treasuries it holds, that could start a fire sale here because our banks hold vast quantities of these treasuries that were bought when the interest rates were very, very low that now have really no value. If those things begin, that's going to have a huge impact here. But from a military standpoint, the one actor in the region that should be taken very seriously is Mr. Erdogan in Turkey. And I wish people would look at the remarks that he's made over the last couple of weeks. And he said several things that everyone should listen to this man. He is not hot air. He's real. He leads the Muslim Brotherhood in the Middle East. He leads it in North America. He is a believer. He is quite serious. And he said recently, speaking directly to Netanyahu, you, Mr. Netanyahu, are finished. You're gone. We are not talking to you anymore. It's over. Then he said, you, Mr. Netanyahu, are quick to threaten others in the region with your nuclear power. Let me be clear. All the nuclear weapons at your disposal will not rescue you. You will not survive this. And then he said, at some point, Turkish soldiers will fight in Gaza. Now, those need to be combined with what the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia said, because you're looking at two sides of the same coin. One kind is military power. The other coin is primarily economic. You have the Suez Canal. You've got the Straits of Hormuz. What does it take to shut them down and block them? Not a great deal. And then you have Iran. Iran is not like Turkey. Its population is not violently anti-Israeli. It isn't. It's very upset by what's happening. But the Iranians are much more moderate in their views. Unfortunately, though, the Iranians know that if they are to be taken seriously in the region and by the Islamic world, they have to take Gaza very seriously. And they've done that. They have an enormous arsenal of tactical theater ballistic missiles. as well as cruise missiles and unmanned systems. They have enough of them ready to shoot, ready to launch, that they could destroy much of Israel's urban terrain. In other words, its cities. We haven't even discussed the Turks yet. I'm talking about Iran. The biggest mistake we could make would be to attack Iran. And pointing to Iran and blaming them for what happens in Iraq and Syria is infantile. Those militias want us out of their countries. That's what it's about. Get out. You're not wanted. And the people that have been working to bring on a war with Iran for over a decade are saying everything they possibly can, once again, to indict Iran and provoke a war with it. And remember, President Trump went through this in 2019. You had Bolton at the time and Pompeo, McKenzie and CENTCOM. All these people were, well, it's Iran, it's Iran, it's Iran. We literally set them up to shoot down the Global Hawk and then said, that's it. And oh, by the way, Mr. President, we have the strike packages ready to go. And President Trump said two things. First of all, how many people did we kill with the Global Hawk? Well, of course, none. It's unmanned. And there was no pilot. Oh, well, then what happens after we launch the strikes? What a great question. What happens if we land troops in South Vietnam? Well, we'll see what happens. We're going in. We're going to march in. We're going to do these things because it's the right thing to do. This is the problem. This is the threat to the United States. The existential threat to our country and our society is no afterthought, impulse, emotion, passion. There is no strategic reason for direct combat between ourselves and Iran. Neither is there any reason for that between ourselves and Russia or between ourselves and China. We are in other people's countries, in other people's neighborhoods, trying to dictate outcomes. That's over. We are not the great superpower of 91, and they have all recovered and become infinitely more powerful economically, militarily over the last 30 years. We need to understand that however much we want to be, we are no longer the center of the universe. We are not the sole sun in this galaxy. We don't seem to want to come to terms with that, Stephen. Yeah. And that's our great problem right now.
Yeah.
No. Well, I have Joe Olson joining me. Let me see if I can...
whatever he can to drag us back into the war, because he knows that he's effectively on the road to being abandoned.
Let me see if I can get back there.
The money is going to stop. The arms have already stopped. The ammunition isn't coming. He's at the end of his rope, so I think he's probably ready to do or say anything that promises to help him in any way.
Yeah, okay. So by following your work and your contacts, we've learned the truth that millions, tens of millions of Ukrainians have fled Ukraine. They have no plan of returning to the country. 500,000 plus Ukrainian soldiers have been killed or injured. Yet the war continues with Zelensky remaining confident that he can win. It is, again, is this Zelensky employing his acting skills, or does he actually believe he can beat Russia and Vladimir Putin?
Well, Joe, I'm very sorry that I've got a problem here with a technical glitch. I'd like to end this with my dear excellent commentator here, but let me see if I can figure out how to do that.
He may not survive in office. He's offended, aggravated, angered millions of Ukrainians. He's led them down the path to total disaster. That usually ends badly for the leader. And then, of course, he's probably got a number of escape routes planned to various places where his bank accounts and homes are located. But, you know, look, this war is over. You know, if you wanted any evidence for that, all you had to do was essentially look at the budget fight over the money. Suddenly now everyone who was pushing war with Russia in Ukraine is now pushing war with the world inside Gaza for Israel. So we've just essentially taken the same chorus, moved it to a different theater. They're singing the same kinds of tunes, hoping for a better outcome. I don't think the outcome is going to be good in either case, but, you know, that's another matter.
Do you think, or what would you guess NATO leaders are telling Zelensky behind the scenes? Do you think that they're saying, hey, listen, we've supported you, we've given you more than enough, it didn't work out, and it's now time to get to the peace talk tables? Or do you think that they are still quietly behind the scenes pumping him up with confidence that he can win this thing?
I think he's probably being told privately that it's over and that he should probably step down graciously, which I don't think he can do, as I mentioned earlier, in favor of someone else stepping forward that the West can present as a credible representative of the remaining Ukrainian state, whatever that is, to sit down and negotiate some end to the conflict with the Russians. I think any thoughts of turning Ukraine into the contemporary equivalent of Napoleon's Spanish ulcer for Russia are over. I don't think anybody thinks that that's possible. I also don't see much evidence that anybody in Europe wants that to happen. So, you know, we'll just have to watch. Now, I do see evidence that you still have some fighting. The Ukrainians are sort of clinging with their fingernails to the edge of the cliff. And the Russians are now pressing ahead. Anybody who thinks that the Russians are sitting still is wrong. This Avdiivka fight, which is sort of Bakhmut on steroids, conflict with the Russians, is about over. After that, I'm not sure there's much left. Whatever Ukrainians are there that still constitute the army will want to retire to the Dnieper River and cross it and get out of the way. The question is entirely up to the Russians. What do they want to do? What are they going to demand? Are they going to offer any terms at all? To whom will they speak? They're certainly not going to pay any attention to anything we say. We've yet to tell the truth to them about anything. So the question is, who can step forward? I don't have that answer. I think they've got to wait, frankly, until there's some turnover in European governments and they have new leadership before they can expect anything from them. So, you know, the tragedy is not yet completely over, but for all intents and purposes, this is the end. In other words, this is similar to the situation that existed after we crossed the Rhine and the Soviets reached the outskirts of Berlin.
It's very apologetic that I've lost my ability to shut it off, and I'm not quite sure what to do about it. Joe, we could try talking over them, but I think it's going to be tough. Your thoughts?
Isn't it not allowing elections?
Pardon me?
To keep himself in power?
Well, what do you want him to be? The man's already said that.
I can't hear what you're saying. Let me see.
He's effectively banned the Orthodox Christian Church.
What do you want me to do, Joe?
Ukraine. The Bill of Rights. Who has any rights left? I'm not sure there are many rights that cannot be discarded with impunity by him. He still has a substantial SBU or Ukrainian secret police behind him, which looks more and more like the NKVD under Stalin, rounding up people, forcing them into uniform or disappearing them, if you will. I wonder what's going to happen to this Gonzaga Lira, who is sitting in a Ukrainian jail because he was honest and told the truth about events on the ground in Ukraine. Apparently he...
Hey. Hey, Manny, Joe, listen, I'm so pleased to have you join me. Give me your thoughts about what Colonel McGregor was having to say about the situation with regard to Ukraine and how it spills over. Your thoughts, my friend.
Well, he's repeating a lot of the historical fictions on World War II, the Philippines in particular. Anybody that's interested in understanding the truth, I've read 1,500 books on science and history in the last 60 years, and I have a pretty good grasp of what's going on, but nobody reads anymore. So everything has to be put in video content, and it can't be more than 15 minutes long. Perfect website, Tales of the American Empire, has 130 videos. I'm going to briefly mention one of them. America bombs Japan after the nuclear bombings. And in that, they mentioned that in January of 1945, Japan had offered 5 times unconditional surrender, but the United States refused to accept it because we wanted to kill another 1 million Japanese. And that's exactly what happened. Now, he mentioned the Philippines. A great art book is December 8, 1941, MacArthur's Pearl Harbor by William Farkash. And he went through all of the official records. MacArthur had 12 hours notice of the attack on Pearl Harbor. He did not send up a single airplane as a picket for the Japanese attack that they would certainly do on Manila. And we had half of our air fleet of B-17s and half of our air fleet of P-40s sitting on the ground, fully floated, loaded with fuel and ammo, waiting for the Japanese to destroy him. That's what MacArthur did. He's known as Dugout Doug.
Joe, that's all fascinating, but I wanted you to keep it current. Tell me your comments directly about McGregor in relation to Ukraine and Gaza.
Yes. Well, bottom line is they try to create every war and extend them as far as possible. Yeah, he's right on Gaza, and this is something else that's been stage set. And we know that Netanyahu had the IDF going in there and shoot Israelis so they could run up the death count. And they're tampering with all the evidence. It's absolutely 100% crimes against humanity. It's as bad as any Holocaust that's been pulled, you know, based on the amount of population that in history. But this is a history that's gone back with a certain tribe that has control of the
war that, hey, you know, in order to get someone to surrender, You go for the flag. You go for the capital.
Joe, again, I think that is probably
Jesus,
everybody's
got rid
mind
of it.
Right
now.
Now
I got to get rid of it again.
But having said that, we've got to keep a certain number of things clear in our minds. First of all, when the Russians initially intervened, everyone said, "Oh, look at this pitiful force. It's too small for the mission."
Here we go.
There aren't enough.
Now we got it. Here we're first. We'll be right back. Joe Olson, stand by.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Be absolutely spot on of our carriers being a grave risk. Check this out.
To construct multi-purpose ships with high-precision missile systems designed to destroy critical infrastructure and naval targets, including aircraft carriers and ship strike groups. The head of the Russian Ministry of Defense, speaking at a meeting of the Military Department Board, also urged that all components of the strategic nuclear forces be kept in constant readiness. In his address, General Shoigu subtly articulated Russia's intent to take on the challenge posed by the U.S. leadership's brashly articulated intent to weaken Russia. U.S. carrier groups are key to maintaining U.S. hegemony, and Russia appears to have taken note. But the task before Russia isn't trivial.
If you sleep on your side, I bet you hate your pillow, and this is why.
They might be as fluffy as a cloud, but they just don't support your head. So you double up on pillows. You fold them in half, you sleep on your arm.
Joe, I just want to say it looks very much as though Russia is prepared to take out all of our carrier strike forces. They put their hypersonic missiles on highest alert. I think they're all sitting ducks. Your take?
Oh, absolutely. They've got nuclear submarines with those same hypersonic missiles. They've got hypersonic torpedoes. They've got bombers with the hypersonic missiles. They've got ground-based and naval-based hypersonic missiles, and there's no way of us protecting them. The moment that they decide they want to have a new Pearl Harbor, we've got 11 floating Pearl Harbors that'll be sunk in the first 2 hours of conflict. And it's absolutely insane for these people to keep saber rattling the way they are. Right now, we have two carrier groups in the Mediterranean. We brought over the Roosevelt and the Ford from San Diego in the theater, and they're planning on putting one of them in the Red Sea and the other one in the Gulf of Iran. It's like, give me a freaking break. We're sitting there right on their doorstep with something that's going to be easy targets for all of these people, and then we're just threatening them constantly. It's absolutely insane.
Are they seeking to bait Iran or Russia to take out a carrier to justify a nuclear attack?
You know, maybe they're going to do a USS Liberty. Maybe our good ally over there is going to sink one of our boats and say, they did it, they did it.
Yes.
These people are maniacal. They're genocidal. They're, they're delusional. They're completely apartheid. There's not a more racially superior group on the planet than the ones that have hijacked our banking, media, and government systems worldwide, and that's why we have this big problem.
Joe, in addition, we have a photo report about Palestinians buried in mass graves having been uncovered. This seemed to me utterly consistent with Israel's war crimes. Why am I not surprised? These photos, though, look at them. Those are fresh. This is when they were being buried, I would say. I don't see dirt on top of them. Your thoughts, Joe?
Yes. Well, you know, one good Hallam door deserves a Holocaust, and that Holocaust deserves a repeat Holocaust. You know, it's unfortunately history repeats because people don't freaking understand it. Wanted to touch a little bit on the origins of Interpol and secret police, secret courts, and extrajudicial executions. There's a guy named Alex Butterworth, who was a graduate student writing a report on secret police, and he went over to Scotland Yard. He said, "Man, I'm doing this term paper and thesis, and I need to get information." They said, "Oh, come on in. Nobody's looked at these files for 100 years," and they turned him loose for a year, researching all of the stuff that went on during the 1850s up through 1900. And turns out that the commune and anarch movements, mainly in France, but throughout Europe, were all peace movements. All they wanted to do was end the monarch-directed wars and have a representative government, just like America did with Bill of Rights and property rights. But the governments refused to let them do that. So they were constantly at war. What people do not know is that agent provocateurs was a term that they used to describe the communists that were funded by Rothschild, because Karl Marx was a Rothschild cousin and his wife was from the Phillips industrial family, which is the second largest industrial group in Europe. And so he was the creator, quote, of communism. And they kept trying to infiltrate these peace movements to get communism introduced, and they kept saying no. Well, they started doing bombings and killings and murders, and they would kill their own opponents and their own supporters. It was just absolutely savage, and that's why they started the secret police with the extrajudicial executions. People do not know that during the Civil War, France invaded Mexico because the Mexicans had support from the British and French Rothschilds to keep Texas away from America. And so they funded Santa Anna in the 1836 war, and then they funded him again in the 1845 war, and they weren't able to pay back all the brown vests and the military equipment that they had bought from France and England. So France invaded with 60,000 troops in 1863, while we weren't able to do an effective Monroe. And then we drove them out in 1867. And then they turned right around and started the Franco-Prussian War. And the Germans were within artillery range and were shelling the outskirts of Paris in 1870 when there were peace riots. And they were peaceful riots, and they marched in French troops and shot 30,000 people in Paris on the streets. Sure. So, you know, this is a bit of history that nobody knows, but that goes back to the same group of people doing the same kind of tactics against us over and over and over.
Ah, so you're saying once again, we're simply in history repeat. Meanwhile, Antiwar.com, the truth seeker has explained how the U.S. is helping Israel to commit and hide war crimes. This is pretty disturbing. Moon of Alabama observed, some headlines are just weird. U.S. has sent Israel data on aid group location to try to prevent strikes. Anyone who has over the year watched the regular massacres committed by the Israeli occupation forces will immediately understand. The headline really means this. U.S. is providing Israel targeting data for bombing aid groups in Palestine. And indeed, the Biden admin had been providing Israel with the location of humanitarian groups in Gaza for weeks to prevent strikes against their facilities. But Israel has continued to hit such sites. The information includes GPS coordinates of a number of medical facilities, and information as movements of aid groups in Gaza to the Israeli government for at least a month. All were granted anonymity, those who were providing this information, because they feared speaking publicly would make it more difficult for aid groups to operate in Gaza. Still, Israel has launched operations against Hamas in or near aid sites, including hospitals, leading to the destruction of buildings and the blocking of fuel and other critical supplies, Joe. It's just outrageous what's going on here. The U.S. is openly providing them GPS data so they can target them. I mean, this is enough to make you vomit.
Yes, well, during the Holodomor, Stalin killed 30 million Christians in the Ukraine area, And the New York Times had a reporter over there named Walter Durante who had visited the area, and he said, oh, man, this is like an absolute picnic. Everybody here is wonderful. We're having concerts in the park every weekend. Everything's great. There's no starvation. There's no problem with the Holodomor going on in Ukraine. And he won a Pulitzer Prize for that. Now they say, well, we can't revoke the Pulitzer Prize because he's not alive to defend himself. How do you defend provable lies for over a century? You know, that's the whole problem. We've got these people that run the news media that shape all of the narrative, and we've got people that can't see the truth because the narrative is so in your face and so constant. It's like they say, flood the zone. They can keep constantly flooding the zone with false accusations and false, you know, narratives. It's ridiculous.
Meanwhile, Joe, we have this win in the Netherlands, or what may be a win. When it was Mass 2009, when the Massachusetts Democratic Party, filled with hubris and complacency, scoffed at the idea that the seat of Ted Kennedy would ever be challenged by Republicans. Meanwhile, another group in 2023 in the Netherlands took the same quiet and deliberate approach. No one saw it coming, but Geert Wilders is now the new prime minister of the Netherlands. He has made a lot of declarations about getting out of the European Union, about ending support for Ukraine and so forth. But I've heard also rumors that he's actually covertly on the side of the globalists. Joe, your take.
Yeah, well, that's the whole problem. Turns out the guy down in Argentina is probably a WEF puppet, too. He says that he's going to replace the Argentine currency with the U.S. dollar. So while the rest of the world is trying to de-dollarize, he's going to re-dollarize. So, you know, you never know. That they've got so many different irons in the fire, and people are so easily bought and so easily intimidated. We've got a system just like Whitney Webb says, democracy by intimidation. It's ridiculous. You know, it's blackmail. Nation by blackmail, I think is what the name of her book is. But it's like 900 pages long. She documents all this stuff. We've got fully compromised people on both sides of every party and on every side of the debate, and we can't get a word in edgewise.
John McLaughlin's observed Trump so far ahead that there's no way anyone could catch him in the primaries. I think it's a done deal that he will be the GOP nominee. As I see it, Joe, though, as long as the Democrats can rig these elections using these electronic voting machines, as long as FirstNet, which is under Homeland Security, can monitor and change the vote down to the precinct level, which Barack Obama created or allowed to happen as one of his last acts from before leaving office in the wake of Trump's victory to guarantee it wouldn't happen again. I think, as I've said before, the Republicans could run Jesus Christ as their candidate and he'd still lose to a Joe Biden or a Gavin Newsom or a God forbid Michelle Obama. Your thoughts?
Yes, well, every election's been rigged for at least the last 20 years, pretty much worldwide. The voting machines are owned by a parent company, Dominion, but that includes Smartmatic, Hart InterCivic, Electronic Systems and Software, Sequoia, Diebold, and then the tabulating systems of Octet, Comtech, and trying to remember the other operating system that we use here in Texas. But bottom line is they're able to manipulate the vote easily. Anybody that's the least bit curious about that, go to blackboxvoting.org. Beverly Harris has a 20-minute video called Fractional Voting, and that's exactly how they do it. They set the algorithm for the total number of voters that come in, give me the percentage that you want each candidate to win by, we'll adjust all the votes so that it comes out exactly right. Nobody will be able to tell what happened unless you look at the algorithm. And I met Kathleen Engelbreit at a True the Vote meeting in January of 2011 here in Texas. I attended several of her meetings. She was viciously attacked along with the Tea Party by a multi-vector threat from the Obama administration. Her family owned a machine shop, So they came in and audited through the boat. They audited her and her husband's tax returns and their business returns. While they were auditing the business returns, they said, oh, by the way, you've got a machine shop. We need to see all of the EPA records that you've properly recycled all of the tailings that come off of your machine shop. And then we had OSHA come in, and they go, well, you've got a forklift that you don't have the factory-installed seatbelt on. She goes, we bought it secondhand. This is a seatbelt that was on it. We only use it for once a month to load or unload something off a flatbed outside, but that's not our major business. They said, well, too bad. Find her set $20,000. She pleaded it down to $17,000. Then after the IRS and OSHA and EPA got finished with them, then ATF came in, and they said, well, looks like you had did some trigger work for a gun company. So then the FBI came in and investigated her. So here she is being investigated by five different federal agencies that have all been totally weaponized against anybody that has the slightest amount of freedom in their voice. Absolutely insane that we put up with this crap. She's the one that spent $1 million of her own saved up money to do the tracking on the 2,000 mules. And there was 50,000 mules that they had tracking data on, and they knew where all of the halfway houses were. They knew where the drop boxes were. They knew everything nationwide, and she still can't get that evidence introduced in a court anywhere in America. Absolutely insane. The same technical tracking that they use for criminal cases, and they use to track down the January 6th insurrectionists, they're not allowed to use against the voters that stole the election in 2020.
Joe, you're absolutely right. I want to mention a couple of articles published on my blog related to JFK in the wake. One by Lawrence Goyner on Kennedy assassination. CIA did it. Theorists are covering for Israel. Well, I'm most certainly not covering for Israel. So I added, an overview based upon 30 years of collaborative research with the best experts about how it was done, where, in my view, the most illuminating perspective distinguishes between the sponsors, the facilitators, and the mechanics. And then I embedded several of my presentations on the JFK assassination cover-up with germ warfare on a JFK special, the Real Deal special. Also, an interview for the Barnes Review, following a publication in their November-December issue of 2023, and a Minsk discussion of JFK at 60 with a Belarusian state university, some students and scholars there, all available at that link. And in addition, I've added one more, which is very nice, from Covert Action magazine, namely, 60 years after JFK's death, it's more and more apparent that Kennedy was a victim of a palace coup spearheaded by Vice President Johnson. Let me say, I believe that between those two articles, you get the truth of what happened to JFK. And I'm not discounting Gaillet's suggestion that Israel may have had a larger role. But when you're looking at the sponsors, the CIA, the Joint Chiefs, the anti-Castro Cubans, the mafia, the Texas oil men, Israel, of course, but the Eastern establishment surrounding the Fed, I don't see Israel being a prime mover, but rather Lyndon Johnson, who wanted to become president of all the people. It's open to discussion. But I do believe somewhere between those two articles and the embedded presentations that you can find the truth about JFK. Now, I especially wanted Joe today because he just attended a conference in Dallas on JFK, and he wanted to share with us some of the results, what was presented there for our discussion and contemplation. Joe, I made you host so you can screen share to your heart's content.
Well, I can't screen share, but I sent you something that we can screen share, and that's the conference bulletin from this year's conference. But bear in mind, I met James Spetzer at the 2018 conference, the same group in Dallas. He was a presenter there. I was there for that four-day event. Spent $750 of my own money because the hotel was pretty expensive, and they included meals, which were $30 a meal. This year, I skipped the meals and went to a cheap hotel, and so I only spent $600, but I still invested 500 miles of driving each way, closer to six, and over $600 this year of my own money, because I'm very interested in first-person information, and there were some speakers that were really great. We've got another hour, so I want to do a little bit more predicate before we jump right into that. But bottom line is there were some speakers with some absolutely fabulous thing. But going on in Dallas over this same period, there were four JFK conferences. One of them was the Lancet conference, which had Eric Hudley and Mark Grober, who have a YouTube channel called America's Untold Stories. They've got two dozen episodes, hour and a half long each, on every one of the characters involved in the JFK situation, which is absolutely stunning. But then they also presented James Files as being a great guest, and we'll talk to as a witness, and we'll talk about that when we get to that particular portion. But I want to back up and kind of cover the fact that JFK was not a one-off thing. This is a repeated cycle that the same group of psychopaths that managed to massacre people in the streets of Paris have been pulling forever. We had McKinley assassination. This is just the 19th century. We had the McKinley assassination in 1901 that put Teddy in as president, and he ended up being reelected because he was starting to realize that McKinley was right about the antitrust laws and about the robber barons that were running America. And then in 1912, he ran as a candidate against Woody Wilson and his former vice president, who was then sitting president, Taft. And he was attempted assassination on October 14, 1912, spent the last 3 months of the campaign in a hospital bed, and he still got 27% of the vote. But that put Wilson in as a minority president with only 39% of the vote. So this is a pattern that they'll repeat either with a third-party candidate or by taking out other candidates. So then we had Harding that was elected right after Woody Wilson's total disaster with the World War I, which he promised to keep us out of, the Federal Reserve, and the IRS. So that, you know, he had a collection, a trifecta of defects. But then Harding was elected. A great book on Harding is called The Teapot Dome Scandal by Leighton McCartney. Harding was in the process of being exposed. First of all, he married a woman that was 5 years older than him, that was a wealthy widow, because he couldn't run for political office on his own dime, so he had to have somebody finance him. He cheated on her constantly. He had a 16-year-old girlfriend that he was dating as he was governor of Ohio, and brought her into the White House and had sex with her in the Oval Office within a week of being elected, just exactly like Slick Willie did. So, you know, he got a little bit of repetition going there. He was going to be exposed for the Teapot Dome scandal, and so the walls were closing in on him. He went to a trip to Alaska, and on the way back, his wife and his family physician most likely poisoned him. So we can count that as an assassination. There's claims that FDR was assassinated to put Truman in, and that's possible. I don't really know. But then we had the Watergate situation. They decided that they couldn't keep assassinating presidents, so the CIA set up the Watergate. That was a 100% staged event. They notified the Metropolitan Police that the break-in was going to happen. One of the people that was involved in the JFK assassination, as well as Watergate, was E. Howard Hunt. His wife was really pissed at them, so they said, well, guess what? We need you to deliver some cash to the, or pick up some cash and deliver it to the committee to reelect the president, Creek. And it was like tens of thousands of dollars. I don't remember the exact amount. But anyhow, she was on United Flight United Flight 553, which exploded and crashed at Midway Airport in Chicago. The reports, and you can still pull these up, newspaper reports, there was 10 times as many FBI agents as there were firefighters at the crash site for the first 15 to 20 minutes, because they had advanced warning that her plane was going to go down. And they don't mind using this as their technique. I've read the book The Very Best Men by Ethan Thomas, which was published in 1996 about the early development of the CIA. And I also read Devil's Chessboard by David Talbot, which was produced in 2016 with even more evidence. There is a thing that was passed by the CIA in 1954 called the 5412 Commission. This is a group of people who call themselves the Majestic 12, and they agreed that they could do extrajudicial executions worldwide with just the approval of the vice president and the Majestic 12. So this happened in 1954 when Tricky Dick was VP. He authorized dozens of executions worldwide. And then LBJ became vice president, and he authorized the execution of the president of Vietnam 2 weeks before he authorized the execution of the president of the United States. So they don't mind killing people, and they don't mind killing other people if they get in the way. We also had Larry McDonald, who was on the Korean Airline flight 007, shot down in September 1st, 1983. That plane was being followed by an American AWACS, which was misdirecting the radio frequencies for navigation and putting in bogus phone calls so that when the Russians sent up fighter jets to scramble, they were being told by American Air Force plane that was 100 miles behind it that, yes, we're going to go ahead and do spy photos over Russian territory, and that's why it got shot down. And then we have Pan Am 103, which was blown up over Scotland December 21st, 1988. Surprisingly enough, there was 25 CIA agents from Europe, including two station chiefs that were on board that airplane, and the video footage of the Heathrow Airport showed the son of the FBI investigator for that crash at the loading dock and witnessing placement of material inside the airplane before it was exploded. And they blamed that on Gaddafi. So that's pretty good. And then you were witness to what happened with Paul Wellstone. He was opposed to the expansion of the war and the 9-1-1 stuff. And so they blew up his plane on October 25th, 2002.
Well, he was speaking out against the Iraq war. And Dick Cheney warned him directly, face to face, that if he opposed them on Iraq, there'd be severe ramifications for him personally and for the state of Minnesota, which he shared with veterans. This is like the day before his death. It wasn't a bomb on the plane. They used directed energy weapon to take it down. Joe, we're going to go to a break, and we'll talk about the JFK conference you attended. We'll be right back.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting "This is a drill, this is a drill" on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Joe, I'm updating to get the JFK historical group here for you. I think I may have it. Let me see. Give me one moment more. There we go. The JFK historical group. Can you see, Joe?
No, but I've got the actual brochure, so I can go through that.
Okay, well, go ahead, Joe. I'm keen to have your thoughts and comments. Go right ahead.
Okay, yeah. One additional point I wanted to make was that LBJ stepped down from the office in 1968, the same time that there was assassination of RFK and MLK. So just shortly after he said that he wasn't going to run for office, those two contenders for power in the United States were assassinated. We ended up electing Tricky Dick because he said he was going to get us out of Vietnam. We'll get to Vietnam in just a second. But in 1972, when he was running for re-election, after 4 years of not getting us an honorable peace, as he promised, he was opposed by George Wallace. And on May 15th, 1972, George Wallace, as a presidential candidate, was wounded and spent the rest of his life in a wheelchair. And then Tricky Dick, all he had to do was smear McGovern campaign, and he got reelected, and then he got caught with the Watergate thing. So that's just that little data point. Now, the next one I want to mention is that one of the final acts that Jack did before he was taken out was a National Security Administration memo. This is a NASAM 263, which he issued on October 22nd, 1963, that said, beginning immediately, we're going to go ahead and remove all U.S. troops in Vietnam. Well, on November 26th, which was 4 days after he was killed, the new president, LBJ, passed NASAM 273, rescinding that and increasing the U.S. presence. And then we had the Gulf of Tonkin. Well, Gulf of Tonkin happened.
Well, Joe, let me just intervene that McGeorge Bundy had prepared that new version several days before the assassination. Obviously, it wasn't for Jack to sign, but for LBJ. In other words, that's a major proof that the assassination was coming from the highest levels of the American government. Continue.
Yes, and then they stage-set the Gulf of Tonkin on July 30th, 1964, and because there was still a whole bunch of questions about what really happened to JFK, they decided to, on August 14th, 1964, convene the Warren Commission. So after we were already eyeball deep in Vietnam, they said, oh, well, we better go cover up this little mess that we made in Dallas. So absolutely insane that we have to deal with this, but that's the world that we're dealing with. Now, getting on to the conference, there's a whole number of speakers, and I don't want to slight anybody that I don't have time to talk about, but one of them is Chris Milligan with Trine Day, T-R-I-N-E Day, publishers. They publish a lot of stuff, just like Moonrock Books does, that can't get published anywhere else. Highly recommend him. He's one that's published a lot of this alternative media source, really good speaker. Then following him on Thursday was Robert and Janet Grogan. They made their first presentation to that group in 2018 when you were there, and you said, my God, they've done fabulous work. They were the ones that got FOIA released on three different Zapruder films. Turned out that they all three had different pieces of the puzzle missing. They did a frame-by-frame edit and put together a composite that had most of the material, and you're a better expert on that, and that's a subject that you and Larry Rivera or Robert Grogan can actually cover yourselves.
Well, let me just say,
yes,
Grogan did get the extant version of the Zapruder on television in 1975 on Geraldo's show. We've done massive research on the Zapruder. It's been extensively edited. They removed around 100 frames turning from Houston onto Elm because a driver mistook the frontage road in front of the book depository for Elm Street and nearly hit a concrete abutment. Had to pause to get back in line. I think that took it out. They took that out because it would have shaken the confidence of the American people in the Secret Service. Then after Jack had been hit in the back and in the throat, what was still alive, the driver pulled the limousine to the left and to a halt to make sure he would be killed. During that, he was hit in the back of the head by a shot fired from the Dal taxi. Poor Jack eased him back up, and he was hit in the right temple by a bullet that blew his brains out the back of his head from the intersection of the triple underpass and the picket fence. The driver, the motorcycle patrolman Bobby Hargis, got off to the left rear, got off his bike, ran between the limousines up to the grassy knoll. Douglas Jackson on the right motored his bike up the grassy knoll. Five Secret Service agents got out and surrounded the presidential limo. One took a chunk of skull from a little boy, threw it in the seat. And we have just discovered, and I don't know if you had this session, that a Secret Service agent actually got into the limousine over and beyond, in addition to Clint Hill. So it was an extra Secret Service agent there whose identity has been completely obscured, his presence. But they removed 400 more frames. Now, the problem with all this, which we've established beyond any doubt, and where I have four or five who've seen the other film unedited and confirmed the limo stop and activities like those I'm describing, is that Robert Grogan, like Josiah Thompson, insists to this day that the Zapruder film is authentic, when we have cast iron proof that it's been massively edited. In fact, John P. Costello is a leading expert. Did a tutorial on the film and discovered what was about 98% technically perfect or 2% that gave it away, just as an illustration. They took out the stem and three-way sign because it had a bullet hole in it that would have, you know, refuted the three-bullet scenario. But when they replaced it in the wrong position. This is one of multiple proofs John Costello has provided. So while Grogan looked like a good guy, in my opinion, he and Josiah Thompson, who also initially looked like a good guy, are the core of a limited hangout to constrain research to get to the bottom of what actually happened to JFK. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, Jim, we lost audio.
We'll wait until he stabilizes.
There he is.
Information, but on a local TV station, stuck in their archives that he just recently discovered, and he disclosed it at this particular conference. So that's very valuable information. Something that people need to realize is that ever since the church hearings in 1975, when they disclosed how terrible the CIA was, and then they had the extra hearings on doing a reopening the investigation, the Gallup polls have had 70% disapproval of the Warren report, including the two lone gunmen, which would be Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby. They disproved that the public does not believe that Jack Ruby loved JFK so much, that's why he had killed Lee Harvey Oswald. And nobody believes the magic bullet theory. So to spend any time discussing those three points is absolutely futile, because we've got an enormous amount of evidence that even if they won't release the CIA files, we've got enough to completely cover anything that could be in those CIA files. And we know that everything that they've been saying for 60 years has been an absolute lie.
Let me give you an illustration. You mentioned how Larry Rivera and Gary King and I do the new great JFK show. We've done around 300 of these in the past 5 or 6 years or more. And among them was Gary studying, Larry studying the release of the documents related to the trip Lee Oswald is alleged to have made to Mexico City to get a pass, a visa to travel to Cuba to make his escape to Russia. Well, not only has Larry been able to establish based on the released documents that it was all a fabrication, it was all made up, where three of the CIA assets involved in the whole scheme were presidents of Mexico. But it turns out they've now finally released Lee's passport, and it's taped right on the passport. It says, not valid for travel to Cuba, Joe. In other words, the whole thing has been such a sham. Continue, my friend.
Yes, the Dallas Police Department had raided his boarding house, which was close to where he was working, and they had his original 1959 and 1963 passports, and they just recently put them on digital file, and that's what Larry released at this particular meeting. He showed you copies of it. Said, this is exactly what was in the passports, and the Dallas PD's been sitting on it for 60 freaking years. So the next guest that was absolutely fabulous.
I'm on the air. I'll call you as soon as I'm off.
Patrick. And you can read the bios. If you go to the JFK Historical Group, you go to their website, and it's jfkhistorical.com, and you can pull up speakers at 2023, and it's got the bio on all these people. Ed Tatro's done an excellent job of putting all these pieces together. I asked him about doing a possible video interview, and he said, man, I'm not doing any interviews. I already got my head high enough off the firing line. I don't need to be an extra target for anything. So he kind of declined. But here's the next speaker that was absolutely fabulous. Saturday morning, Chana Gayle Willis was there. Her father was Phil Willis. He was joined the U.S. Navy on December 8, 1941. He was recognized as having a pretty high IQ, so they put him in the OSS and made him a photographer. He was stationed in the South Pacific and was taking pictures of JFK and PT-109. And he said, that arrogant prick, and he got in a fist fight with him. So they moved him over to the European theater. He took the pictures of Stalin and FDR and Churchill at Yalta. Then they moved him around other different places during World War II. But then he was in the photo analyzing section, and he analyzed the LVAP-62, which were the aerial photos of the missile sites in Cuba in 1962. And he, in his own hand, circled in red where all the missile sites were located all across Cuba for targeting by the United States. He was taken in after the end of the war into the Office of Naval Intelligence, ONI, and he had clearance that was called cosmic clearance, which is above top secret clearance. His daughter had been told family stories, and he said, you cannot tell any of this because they will kill our whole entire family. He said, but I've got all of the evidence it takes to prove exactly what I did in my whole entire life. And so he had written a manuscript. He had copies of diaries that he had. He had original copies of all of his service orders. He had thousands of reels of film that he had taken. that he had the negatives for, and most of those photos have never, ever been published, and they're not available outside the CIA. He said, you can't say anything until I die. He died in 2014, so his family has been collating this information, and she was up there showing us actual photos. These are the series of photos. This is the one that you can find on internet. None of these others you can find anywhere because they're all highly classified. She goes, I'm blowing the whistle on all this stuff. He was ordered to be on the grassy knoll to document what happened that day. He was standing right next to the shooter.
The shooter. There were, I've identified eight shooters, Jack, Joe. So, I mean, he was, it may have been Roscoe White, who was in a police uniform, who was a CIA shooter with a handgun, who had the easiest shot, but he would have injured Jackie, and they were under strict instruction she not be harmed, so he bolted his shot. The bullet wound up in the grass where it was picked up by a Dallas lieutenant, police lieutenant by name of Day, and never seen again. Go ahead, Joe. Give us more.
Oh, yes. Well, one other speaker that was on Friday that I forgot to mention is Casey Quinlan, Quinlan. He's author of a book called Behind the Fence. Let's see, what is it? I've got it written down in the wrong place, wouldn't you know? He's author of Beyond the Fence Line. And one of the things that he disclosed, which was an absolute shock to me, was that Reinhard Gehlen, who was head of the Abwehr, A-B-W-E-R-T, the W's are pronounced as a B in German. This was above the SS. This was the Secret Service inside Germany during World War II. And he was a general in the German Army at a higher rank than anybody in the SS. And then what happened is, I didn't know this, is that Reinhard Gehlen and Alan Dulles were classmates at Oxford getting their law degrees together. And after they graduated from Oxford, they went to Sullivan and Cromwell and worked together several years in New York for the New York bankers. And they were able to get an agreement for Rockefeller for a $250 million loan to the German government if it would be repaid in gold when the war was over. And then Gehlen went back, served with the Nazis, but he knew that Alan Dulles was in Switzerland, so he got stationed close to the Swiss border and was going back and forth and managed to talk Hitler into moving all of the Nazi gold up into the Swiss Alps so it could be taken to Switzerland after the war. After the war, he was paperclipped into the U.S. CIA, and then he went back and served in the BND, which was the post-war intelligence agency and for NATO. So and bottom line is he was U.S. general as well as a Nazi general.
And what became of all the Nazi gold, Joe?
They found it in the Swiss banks, and that's why the Jews had an enormous claim on it. They said it was all stolen from us, but it was stolen all across the European theater. And the Philippine gold was stolen by the Japanese, and we stole it back from the Japanese, and we'd previously stolen the gold from the Chinese during the American Volunteer Group occupation of China by Japan in 1937. We sent the USS Houston over there and loaded it with bullion and sent it up to Fort Knox. So we would hold it till the end of the war, and we'll draw the payments for the P-40s that we send you and the American Volunteer Groups from the gold that Chiang Kai-shek had sent. And then great story about that. Tex Hill, Flying Tiger. This is an autobiography by a pilot from Texas that was in the American Volunteer Group. He said that Alan Dulles was responsible for making sure that Mao got a hold of all of the U.S. weapons, I mean, all of the Japanese weapons that were over there in the Chinese theater, and that Alan Dulles funded the Mao to overthrow Chiang Kai-shek, and that there was over 2,200 American prisoners of war that ended up being killed by Mao Zedong, along with a guy named John Birch, who had been working underground. He'd been raised as a missionary and spoke excellent Chinese, and he was the one that coordinated all of the U.S. Air Force attacks inside China because he spoke Chinese and he moved very fluently with them. And he was on his way to negotiate with Mao to get the U.S. prisoners released, and he was executed. And that's why the John Birch Society was named after him by a guy named Robert Welch out of San Antonio. But the John Birch Society was based on a guy who they claimed was the first casualty of World War III, and probably he was. And another unmentioned fact is that we had sent a whole bunch of technicians over to assemble and teach the Russians how to use our equipment. Airplanes that were shipped in parts needed to have mechanics. They needed to have flight instructors. They needed to have translators. They needed to have people to show them how to set up the machinery to build tanks and guns and weapons. And then there was POWs that were captured in Eastern Europe. Over 18,000 Americans were held by Stalinist Russia, and they executed all of them. They put them in gulags and killed all of them. None of them were returned.
Very good, Joe. You have others you want to talk about? I know you mentioned James Files. Files claimed to have been, as it were, the second gunman behind the picket fence on the grassy knoll. I know Files. I like the guy personally. I featured him and his wife at my favorite steakhouse here in Madison. During our conversation, he twice said something I found rather striking, to wit, once a government stakes out a position, it's stuck with it and will never change. Now, of course, the original Warren Commission had three shots the day of the assassination. The FBI and the Secret Service concluded there were three shots with three hits. The jacket had been hit in the back, about 5.5 inches just below the collar to the right of the spinal column, that Connally had been hit in the back, and that Jack had been hit in the back of the head, killing him. When the House Select Committee reinvestigated in 1977-78, however, and this is in the wake of the magic bullet theory having emerged because a distant bystander by the name of James Tague was injured by a fragment of a bullet that had missed, and they had to subtract from the three shots to only two, move the wound to the back up, not just to the shoulder, but to the base of the back of the neck, and then account for the what was actually the entry wound to the throat, turn it into an exit wound, and to go into Connally, even though he was hit by separate shots. The House Select Committee 77-78 made two deft moves. One was that even though Harold Weisberg had reported that the Warren Commission was having a terrible time concealing that Oswald was in the doorway of the book depository at the time the motorcade passed by, which was also the belief of a conclusion of Jim Garrison, they were having a terrible time concealing that fact. They used Robert Groden as a special consultant to investigate these rumors. Where Groden went about fabricating evidence to make the case that it was actually Billy Lovelady. We have done so much on this, Joe. The height, the weight, the build, the shirt, the T-shirt were exactly the same as of Lee Oswald when he was arrested. The Dallas cops were so aware that he had been in the doorway, they had him take off his outer shirt. Marina, via Ed Tatro, by the way, confirmed that she had actually laundered that shirt. But Groden fabricated evidence. In fact, he had Billy Lovelady put on a black and white checkered shirt to resemble that of a man in the crowd. But I've identified the man in the crowd as a gorilla man because he has such a strained countenance. He's much more larger, bulkier than Billy Lovelady. But Groden actually fabricated evidence. One of the shirts has a pocket, the gorilla man, but the Billy Lovelady shirt doesn't. So he was dutiful as a stooge to come back and tell the House Select Committee what they wanted to hear, namely that it had been Billy Lovelady in the doorway, which was an ambiguity because Billy Lovelady was also in the doorway, but he wasn't the doorman, the figure identified as Lee. And in addition, the House Select Committee reconstituted the blood at the back of the head. It had been fist size in Parkland. It had been enlarged in Bethesda, where Commander Humes took a cranial saw to the skull and enlarged so it was the whole back of the head as though something could have been caused by a rifle if Jack had been leaning way forward, taking off the top of his head, which is no fantasy. You can find described with mathematical detail in the Bethesda autopsy report, which I included as an appendix to Assassination Science, published in 1998, my very first publication of collections of essays by the best experts to ever study the case, they reconstituted the skull so there was no blowout at the back of the head at all. Not only that, but whereas the Bethesda pathologist had properly located where that shot to the back of the head had entered, which is just below the external occipital protuberance, that bump on the head you'd rest if you were reclining in a bathtub, that was a bona fide shot. They said the pathologist sat wrong by 4 inches and moved it up to the crown of the head. But in fact, that's only seen in diagrams. Photographs of the head don't show it. In other words, the House Select Committee tried to cover up, redo the cover up, but it was an abject failure. So if anyone has any doubt about the monstrosity of the cover up, just compare the Parkland blowout, fist size, the Bethesda, the whole back of the head, and then the House Committee, it's not there at all. Stunning stuff, Joe. I know you've had further thoughts you want to add. Do so, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's another little bit of evidence on the Tippit murder. Turns out he was shot by 2 different caliber pistols. Lee Harvey Oswald only had possession of a .38 revolver. He was Tippit was shot with a .38 revolver and a .45 auto, and then they threw down a wallet that belonged to Lee Harvey Oswald. The only problem was that when he was arrested, he had a wallet in his possession. So it was like, oops, well, we better destroy that little piece of evidence. So since he was already taken into possession at the Dallas Police Department and they had it as positive ID, the fake ID had to disappear. So that was another little bit of a sleight of hand where they just didn't coordinate all of their backstory.
Yeah, but Joe, that stuff has been known for 30 years. I mean, that's not new. It's interesting. It was being recycled here, and I don't think it's a bad idea. May I say, we're opening the call lines, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Right after the break, we'll take your calls, and Joe will add further thoughts he may have about the conference and other matters as soon as we hear the break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com. the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We have a special caller here, J.D. from Florida, former SEAL, who wants to address an issue related to Mitchell Bupp, my producer of long standing, who's in a bit of a dire straits. J.D., join the conversation.
Hoorah. Thanks, Mr. Fesser, and hi to all my old Reverend friends. You know, as active duty military and now as a veteran, I've been very fortunate. I live in a really nice condo. I've got cars. I've got savings. I got motorcycles. I'm single. I got a lot of female friends. They look really good in their bikinis. But there's a lot of veterans out there that are nowhere near as lucky in this world, which is really sad because they're taking better care of people who are illegally crossing our border than they are the people who volunteered and went overseas to fight for this poor country in this current state. And my friend Mitchell is working on a veterans shelter program, and I would really like to ask all the listeners out there to help support him and join in on this cause. Mitchell's a great guy, a solid Marine. And everybody out there, I want you to remember something. There's some oaths that we take that never expire. And for me, you know, I swore to protect the Constitution and this country from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And unfortunately, I hate to say this, as a person who went overseas to fight for this country, that it chills me to the bone to see what's happening here. And the domestic enemies, to me, are enemy number one right now. And I never ask anybody to do something that I'm not willing to do. And I'm donating to Mitch and his cause, and I ask everybody else to. You could send donations to 770 Ramsey Lane, Henry, Virginia. The zip code is 24102. And okay. I would appreciate it, and all veterans out there would appreciate it if you'd help Mitch on his endeavors.
I want you to repeat that momentarily, J.D. I just want to clarify. This is an effort Mitchell has set up to benefit former Marines. He is a former Marine himself, but it's not specifically for him. It's for all former Marines in this category. It's called Shelter Haves, H-A-L-V-E-S, Shelter Haves. So J.D.'s pitch is not only on behalf of Mitchell, but for his effort to help other Marines who have suffered effects from their war experience. J.D., please repeat your message about how that can be done.
Yes, sir. And thanks again. Hoorah. And for us, hoo-yah. yeah, if anyone can help Mitch with this project, it really means a lot to all of us veterans. And you can send donations to 770 Ramsey Lane. That's Henry, VA, Henry, Virginia. And the zip code is 24102. And then I'd also like to address one other thing you were talking about earlier. And let there be no mistake out there. Any downing or even damage to any carrier that's at sea, if that were to happen, then everybody should quickly bend over and kiss your sweet butt goodbye, because I can tell you exactly what'll happen, and it won't even take 24 hours.
Yeah, JD, good. We very much appreciate your speaking out here on behalf of this very worthy effort. I'm most appreciative of your call. Semper Fi, my friend, Semper Fi.
Hoorah.
Tim, the other speakers I wanted to mention was at the 2018 conference, is Judith Berry Baker. She worked with a doctor named Mary Sherman, and two paperclip bioweapons manufacturers from Germany. One of them was Alton Oschner, and the other one was Warren Kopler, which were information that was new to me at this conference. But bottom line is, our government's been trying to figure out how to kill us for a very long time. Mary Sherman was murdered in 1964, unsolved murder, but she was working on how to make rapidly progressing cancers. And who knows, maybe that's what they gave to Jack Ruby to shut him up.
Well, a lot of us think that's right. Jack knew too much. And, of course, Dorothy Kilgallen, unfortunately, let the cat out of the bag that she'd had a one-on-one interview with Ruby, and she was going to blow the case out of the water. And the next thing we know, she's found dead of a barbiturate overdose. She was a user, but she was very cautious about its use. She would never have overdosed. All of her records related to the article she was preparing were gone, and within 2 days, a dear friend of hers in whom she had confided was also found dead. I would not be surprised if it were Roscoe White, whose son Ricky also appeared at the conference to talk about having discovered his dad's diary as a CIA agent. They're required to keep a diary so that if the agency has to fabricate an alibi for one of their activities, they know exactly where they were so they can place them somewhere else. So Ricky White had a lot of good stuff to say about his father, Roscoe, who not only played the role of the body double for Lee in the backyard photographs, as Larry Rivera has been able to establish conclusively, but may have taken out as many as 50 witnesses. This is a very nasty piece of work. And let me add, by the way, because there's a story of Harvey and Lee being two Oswalds who have parallel lives, mothers with the same name. Honestly, I find this such a stretch. I know there was a presentation at the conference about it. My take has been from the beginning, when John Armstrong first introduced his book, Henry and Lee, Harvey and Lee, that in fact he'd mistaken an identity that the CIA fabricates for its agents. So when they return to civilian life, they have a whole complete history. And of course, in relation to the real Lee, there would have been parallels. But the fact is, if you want to prove there were a second Oswald, you'd have to establish there were three Oswald, the original, then the fabricated biography created by the CIA, and then the third, the you're claiming to be the second Oswald. I personally think it's hokum. I think it's just ridiculous. The improbability is beyond belief. Judith and I actually did some collaboration on some of John Armstrong's claims in the book, and were able to refute them. So count me a skeptic about Harvey and Lee. Joe, go ahead. Give us more of your thoughts. And if we have another caller, we'll bring in right away, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452, and we appreciate J.D. calling in about the shelter haves. Go ahead, Joe.
Yes, there's a small town north of Dallas called Allen, Texas, and they have a great library that seats 270 people. They have wonderful live presentations by authors and researchers. They've got their stuff online. A year ago, I went to a presentation by Mark Shaw, who's a lawyer, lives out in California, and he's written two books on Dorothy Kilgallen. He was going to only write one, but he said after he wrote it, he started getting feedback from a whole bunch of people that knew her and had a whole bunch of additional evidence. And he said, I had too much material to ignore, so he ended up writing a second book. He's writing a third book because there's a lot of coincidences between the barbiturate death of Marilyn Monroe and Dorothy Kilgallen. And if the rumors are correct, the Kennedy boys had both played around with Marilyn, and supposedly she was pregnant with one of them, but she also had secrets to disclose. And so bottom line is that her bungalow was bugged by the CIA, and Hoover knew exactly, J. Edgar Hoover knew exactly what was going on there. It may be that he had bad blackmail information.
Let me address that, Joe.
Yes, sir.
Marilyn, of course, had dalliances with Jack. We'll never forget her singing Happy Birthday to Mr. President, which is also, recreated in Breaking Bad in a series, for those of you who have watched, which is absolutely fantastic. But she appears to have had a serious affair with Bobby. I do not believe she was pregnant, but she had threatened to reveal secrets that Sam Giancana didn't want revealed. Marilyn was also a girlfriend of Giancana. And Sam, in apprehension that Marilyn appeared to be unstable, assigned Johnny Roselli to take her out, but said she must feel no pain. You can find the recording in Marilyn at Rainbow's End, which I recommend is a brilliant book. If you want to understand Hollywood and the personalities, James Dean, Marlon Brando, the Rat Pack, Sinatra, the whole bit. This is a wonderful book, Marilyn at Rainbow's End, and that they chloroformed Marilyn and then gave her a barbiturate suppository to bring about her death. Well, yes, it was bugged. I think there were a dozen bugs in Marilyn's little bungalow. Everyone in the world was listening in. I do not believe the Kennedys, Bobby or Jack, can be held responsible, and I discount the claim of pregnancy. But she did know a lot, and it appears to have been Sam who was instrumental in bringing about her demise. Joe, go ahead.
Yes, well, bottom line is they had other speakers, Gary Fannin, Pete Hymans, and Wilbur Klaber were speaking about the RFK assassination at the event on Friday evening. And turns out L.A. had an intelligence division that was comparable to the OSS and the CIA, and they were completely involved in the cover-up of the RFK assassination. It was completely staged 100%. Ciaran Ciaran was a MK Ultra victim, like we all are, because it's trauma-based mind control. So, yeah, bottom line is you can't believe anything that's been told, but once you see a picture that's completely opposite of that, you'll be able to understand the Alice in Wonderland world that we're all in. I wish we weren't in this rabbit hole, but the only way to get out of it is to figure out how we got into it and then expose it and get all of us out of it one time.
I've also, of course, done research on Bobby's death and Martin's death as well, and Sirhan had indeed been hypnotized by a psychiatrist working for the CIA. He even boasted about having hypnotized Sirhan. He was to be triggered off, I believe, by the girl in the polka dot dress. Those who have followed the case will know of whom I speak. The security guard accompanying Bobby into the pantry, which was not the way he was supposed to exit. He was supposed to walk out through the grand ballroom, but I believe Tom Mankiewicz, who was his campaign manager, directed him into the pantry, which raises obvious questions about his role in this event. For I believe Israel had a greater role with regard to Bobby's death than it had to do with Jack's. When Sirhan was firing off his multiple rounds, the security guard who had a Smith & Wesson, I believe it was a 22 of the same make and model as Sirhan, fired into Bobby behind his right ear from an inch and a half. As Bobby fell, he fired three more shots, two of which hit Bobby. One went through his jacket. Bobby grabbed his tie, and in some photographs of him lying on the pantry floor dying, you can see the tie clasps from Thane Eugene Caesar, who was the actual assassin of RFK at the time at the ambassador, where the LAPD were in on it. They dismantled the pantry. There was as many as 15 shots fired. They disposed of it all on the ground that the door frame, for example, with bullet hole, wouldn't fit into a 3x5 card file. I mean, how absurd can you get? And where there were three CIA agents who were present at the ambassador that evening, I believe Edgar probably played a role here, as with Martin, even more so. But we'll save that for another day. Joe, go ahead. Add further thoughts of your own.
Yeah, I want to follow up on the James Files being the shooter on the grassy knoll. He's got two books out. One is called Primary Target, and the other one is Files on LBJ. He was in jail for 25 years. He was an absolute convicted mob hitman, probably killed dozens of people, but he couldn't possibly have been there. And the story is strangely similar to Frank Abagnale, the Catch Me If You Can guy who spent several years in jail and then concocted a story about he was a airline pilot and a surgeon and a lawyer in Louisiana. And he concocted all of these stories while he's sitting in jail. And it appears that probably Files was sitting in jail and being fed the files that the CIA wanted to have disclosed so that they could do an Operation Mockingbird on us. And turns out the Congress was very well aware of what the nasty things could happen in propaganda during war, and they didn't want the CIA to do that. So in 1948, on January 27th, they passed the Smith-Mundt Law, which prohibited the CIA from using propaganda in America. But that law was modernized under Obama on July 2nd, 2013, to be the modernized Smith-Mundt Act, where they can legally lie to us about absolutely everything. So that's the world we're living in, kids.
Well, it was a part of the National Defense Appropriation Act of 2012 and was, you know, basically in the books in time to bring us Sandy Hook, the first of a whole series. Rory Calder traveled down to Newtown in 2006. It turns out Parkland Elementary wasn't even an elementary. It was actually a special needs school. It didn't close. It closed by 2008, but actually closed in 2006. One of the tells is, have you ever heard of an elementary school without a parking lot? But Sandy Hook had no parking lot because it wasn't an elementary school, to offer the community $140 million if they would participate in this scam on the American people, selling it as to illustrate what could happen if we don't take guns away from Americans. Families in the area who didn't want to participate moved out of Newtown. They had auditions for various roles. There were fringe benefits, not paying taxes, free college tuition. They signed non-disclosure agreements. One of the reasons why so few have come forward, but a little over a year ago, I spent a preceding year in contact with two of the participants through their mutual friend, but it was a very close relationship. Margaret Alice Caudle, who was cast as Emily Parker. Y'all remember Robbie Parker? Well, he wasn't her father. He was her uncle, and he was feigning to be her father in his poor acting. But also Victoria Aurelio, who's actually the daughter of the Newtown clerk, who was cast as Vicky Soto, the teacher who died heroically at Sandy Hook and then was recast as Eva Morales at Uvalde for an additional $210,000. I reported these things in various places, but I tell you, the elaborate scams the government has perpetrated by virtue of its legalization by the Smith Modernization Act are staggering. And once again, we have the same president to thank Barack Hussein Obama for opening the floodgates for propagandizing the American people. Joe, a few more of your thoughts.
Yes, well, FJB has bragged that he wrote the Patriot Act in 1996, and they put it in the drawer waiting for it to happen. And then we have the Project for the New American Century, which said we need to overthrow seven Middle Eastern governments. That was released in September of 2000. So there's definitely foreknowledge there. Shocking information about NASA. Future Wars 2025. This is the conference, a day-long conference they had with 150 slides showing how the United States public could not be controlled for continuation of government without trauma-based mind control. This is NASA, and that's on Truth Stream Media. Absolutely fabulous. But then I want to touch base again on how fragile our democracy is and how phony baloney the elections were. There's a great little episode by a guy that does the History Guy on YouTube, and he said that the Rutherford Hayes versus Tilden election in 1876, this was the first election where the South was allowed to participate after, quote, Reconstruction, and turns out it was the closest Electoral College vote ever. It was 185-184, and that Tilden had a 15% higher popular vote, and they still managed to rig the election and twist enough electorals. But that's just one item. In 1948, Dewey absolutely beat Truman, but they managed to rig those. And along with that, LBJ managed to rig the election and steal it so that he'd be U.S. Senator. And then in 1960, that was another very close election. And Nixon said he had proof that they had rigged the vote in Illinois, and that LBJ had rigged the vote in Texas, and that Nixon had actually won, and that's why he was a little bit upset about them. But at that point, it was just like he did exactly what Trump did in 2020. He had his election stolen, and he just went, well, you know, I can't fight it this way, so I'll have to just come back and redo it. But bottom line is, we've had a fake democracy for as long as we've been around.
Let me add two thoughts, one about Bobby and one about files. The world-famous medical examiner for Los Angeles County, Thomas Noguchi, did a sensational, accurate autopsy report on Bobby with a shot from an inch and a half behind the right ear and the two other shots hitting the body and the fourth bullet passing through his clothing but not harming him. You would have expected that would be definitive. But the power of the chief of police at the time was so great that Noguchi was fired because his report was in conflict with that of the LAPD. They couldn't both be right. And what they did was to fire the wrong guy. Surprise, surprise. With regard to files, no less an eminence than Uli Domagard has interviewed James Files with great enthusiasm and endorsed his theory 100%. But if you listen to the interview with Oli, he makes a point that he claims that the limousine never stopped moving, which is false. We know for a certainty the limo came to a halt. In fact, I think it was for a halt for about 20 seconds with all the activity I described, hardest rain between the limos, impossible if they were in motion, Douglas Jackson motoring up on the various agents surrounding the limo and one getting inside in addition to Clint Hill. This means what Piles is saying is false. In fact, it was the limo stop that set up the shot that entered the right temple, which is a shot for which Piles claims responsibility. I want to close by reiterating this charity for Marine Corps veterans known as Shelter Halves that Mitchell's been responsible for organizing, and to reiterate the address where contributions could be made, I presume they'd be made out to Shelter Halves, H-A-L-V-E-S, 770 Ramsey Lane, 770 Ramsey Lane, Henry, Virginia, 24102, 24102. Now, website's in progress, and I'm sure once the website's up, they'll be able to make PayPal or GoSendMe or whatever donations using credit cards. But for the time being, I think it would be checks. That would be most appropriate. 770 Ramsey Lane, Henry, Virginia, 24102. I'll be back to report on this as it develops. Joe, thanks so much for your excellent report about the conference. We have time for final thoughts from you, Joe. Yours.
Yes, there's no statute of limitations on murder, and Files has openly claimed that he committed murder. And if there was enough evidence to convict him, I'm pretty sure that he would be convicted. The federal government had no right to extradite the body of JFK out of Texas. They should have done the autopsy and the investigation and the murder trials right here in the state where it happened, and that didn't happen. And this has been a black eye on the state of Texas. I was in high school in Houston when this did happen, and I was insulted that it happened in Texas, and I was insulted that we ended up having a, quote, Texas president as a result of this coup. And I've been had a lifelong grudge against LBJ for a whole number of reasons, but this is just one of them. And bottom line is Dallas deserves to have their reputation expunged as well as the state of Texas, because we did not participate in this, and the people that did have gone unpunished. And that's why these crimes continue to go on, because this is a continuum. Just like we mentioned from the start, it starts with 30,000 people in the streets of Paris in 1870.
Thank you, Joe. Excellent, excellent. I encourage everyone, have a wonderful weekend. Spend as much time with your family, friends, and people you love and care about. We do not know how much time we have left. Thanks for being here this day after Thanksgiving, 2023. There's so much going on this year that's going to affect the fate of humanity. We'll be back on Monday. See you then.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at...